Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa's here screening your calls. If you're listening to us online, you might want to jump in and grab one of these phone lines. They're filling up quick. The number to dial to join us on the call, 347-884-8327. Once you're on the call, you can press 1 with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be. Lisa will screen your calls, and we're going to be getting to those. This is a modified version of the PIT tonight, Politics and Trucking. I'm going to start off with the letter from Charlie Daniels. I want to talk about that a little bit, but what we talk about on the show is up to you. So I'll read the letter, and we'll see if we get any interest in that, and we'll go from there. So if you've got a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, press 1, and Lisa will start screening those calls, and we'll see what it is we're going to talk about tonight. But I do want to read this letter, and then we'll get to it and see where this leads us tonight. As most of you know, Charlie Daniels is the voice of Road Dog Trucking, and he came out this week with a very strongly worded and well-written letter to the president. I'm going to read that to you now. This is from Charlie Daniels to the president. Mr. President, I write this letter as a patriot, a taxpayer, a lifelong resident, and a concerned citizen of what I consider to be the greatest nation ever known to man, the United States of America. I'm Caucasian, so let's get the racial aspect out of the way to start with. This letter has nothing to do with your race. I lived through the cruelty of Jim Crow and segregation and learned early on in my life that the color of my skin does not make me better or worse than any other man. We all remember Martin Luther King Jr.'s statement about judging people not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, and I believe that with all my heart. I believe that America is an exceptional country. We have been liberator, benefactor, and leader of the free world for centuries. America is an example of what can be achieved by free people living under the free enterprise system. We've led the world in technology, industry, science, and medicine for a long time. Our capitalist system guarantees that those who explore new worlds and bring us new products and better techniques are amply rewarded for their efforts, and this is as it should be. A person who is the first one to get there and the last one to leave, who burns the midnight oil and never gives up until they realize their goals, are a boon to humankind. They're the ones who discover new cures, start new industries, and create jobs. These people deserve to be rewarded for their hard work and for the products and services they bring to make life better for all mankind. Mr. President, it is my personal opinion that you want to take the well-earned rewards of these people and give it to those who have done nothing to deserve them. It's really redistribution of wealth, and it's nothing new. It's been tried many places before, and it has miserably failed in every one of them. It's called socialism. Am I calling you a socialist? Yes, I am. I firmly believe that you are a socialist and a globalist, and that you think America should have a comeuppance and have our playing field level to match those of other countries not as industrious or as innovative as we are. Mr. President, how can you support the building of a mosque in the very same area where Islamic radicals murdered so many Americans? Just whose side are you on? Am I accusing you of being a Muslim? No, I'm not, but the jury is still out a little bit on that subject in my mind, because many times your sympathies seem to lean in that direction. You need to watch who you bow to, Mr. President. You have betrayed a whole generation of African Americans who voted for you because they really believed all that junk about hope and change. They really thought you were going to do something great, and the only thing you've done to make their job is to make their jobs disappear and their health insurance go up. You and your party have corrupted duly elected officials in an effort to get your legislative agenda passed. Remember the Louisiana Purchase and the Cornhusker kickback? And that's just a couple we know about. But you bought off a bunch of congressmen and senators knowing that you were going against the will of the majority of Americans because you think that you and your arrogant friends know more about what's good for America than the citizens your disastrous actions affect. Am I accusing you of being an elitist? You bet. I don't believe you take the Islamic threat to America nearly as seriously as you should. You use semantics like overseas contingency operation and man-caused disasters to soften your rhetoric toward people who would like nothing better than to capitulate the entire population of America. Decapitate the entire population of America. And Mr. President, if you really like to know the kind of warriors who are fighting the overseas contingency operation, and you would like to really know about what kind of enemies they're fighting, you should read a book called Blown Survivor by a brave young Navy SEAL named Marcus Luttrell, who went to hell and back for his country and is still a dedicated patriot. I think you'd find it enlightening. Mr. President, and after you finish it, would you pass it on to Janet Napolitano? And by the way, tell her that my invitation to take her to Iraq and show her some man-caused disasters is still open. Am I calling you naive? Absolutely. You seem to think that America has an endless supply of tax dollars for you to waste and give away, and the debt you've piled up could well bankrupt the greatest nation on earth. Am I calling you a failure, Mr. President? With all due respect, that's exactly what I'm doing. That is a very strongly worded letter. It's very well written, covers a lot of different topics, says it pretty plain and clear. And I think what, you know, a lot of those thoughts are on a lot of people's mind. A lot of people have voiced those thoughts. But I think what makes it interesting is when somebody in a position non-political. You know, Charlie Daniels is an entertainer, and for him to come out with such a strongly worded opinion, I think he has a whole lot more to lose than he has to gain. And I think it's courageous for somebody in that position to set that aside and not worry about what he may lose, and instead just say what he wants to say. I'd like to hear what you have to say about that letter. I'd like to hear what you have to say about our current administration. I'd like to hear what you have to say about the elections coming up and what you're going to do. What do you plan on doing in the elections? You know, I'm certainly not comparing what we do here to somebody so visible coming out with a letter like that, but you know, I get a lot of emails when I try to do any kind of a political topic. I get people that say, look, we don't want to hear politics from you. We come to you because we want to hear about trucking and how to be successful and how to do things better. And when you start talking about politics, I just turn off the show. I get a lot of that. And I know that I have really nothing to gain personally by talking about politics, and I have a lot to lose. If whatever the number is of people have tuned into the show and I start talking about politics, I have nothing to gain from that. No, it's not going to mean somebody else is going to tune in, and it certainly could mean that people will tune out. But you know what? Sometimes you just have to do what you think is right. And I always struggle with how much time on the show, whether it's this show, the podcast, or the live show. You know, we used to do a night dedicated just to politics and trucking, and I found out it's not that popular of a show. I mean, it was our lowest numbers, and that didn't deter me from doing it. What really, the reason I stopped doing it every week was because we really didn't get the debate that I wanted to get. I wanted to hear the other side. We get so much of it in the forums. You know, it's constant debate in the forums on anything that you bring up political in the forums. If you write the forum, you will get debate over and over and over. And yet, on the political show, I got next to nothing. The calls that I got all agreed with my opinion. I love that. And you know, we can certainly talk and agree and you know, move forward. But some debate would be fun, too. We just never got any. So we don't do a lot of politics. But there are times when I'm going to. And there are times that on the live show I'm still going to do it once in a while. And I do know that when I start, people will tune out. I do know that I have more to lose than I have to gain. A lot of people have told me, look, we don't want to hear your politics because we disagree with your politics, and the more we hear your politics, the less we want to hear about your advice. And I understand that. People don't want to take advice from somebody they disagree with so much. But it's important. I've been fairly politically active for most of my adult life. I didn't grow up in a political family. I didn't grow up in a family that voted. I grew up in, if anything, a very democratic union, pro-union family, but they didn't vote, and I didn't vote. It took me, but it didn't take me that long. Into my mid-20s is when I finally started to get somewhat involved, and I've stayed fairly involved since then. And through all that time, I just don't ever remember any election that I feel is as important as the elections that are coming up now, the midterms coming up in a very short period of time, and the presidential elections again coming up in a couple years. We are at a turning point, I think, and I've never seen, you know, the one thing Obama did promise was change, and I've never seen such a radical change. Our government's been heading in this direction, in my opinion, for a long time, from both parties. I'm not, and I never have come in and said the Republicans have all the answers. I don't think they do. I think the Republican Party has gotten way off track. But in my opinion, it's still better than the Democratic Party for the country and for us. But it's not the answer. But we need to start moving back in the right direction before it's too late. And I think that this election coming up is a big part of that. I know I've got some comments, and I just need to find them, so hold on one second. Let's go to Dale. Dale, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, first off, everybody should go out and buy Charlie Daniels' A Simple Man, and that should be the new national anthem.
There
it's
you go.
It's just an outstanding song. And, you know, if you want to look at Obama bin Laden and socialism and just how successful it is, don't look any further than your neighbors to the north. I mean, free health, look at how much our free health care costs us. I mean, it's free.
Yes, free health care.
You can die in line. An MRI is 8 months. You know, so schedule that around your busy schedule when you're trucking and when you're on the road. You need a doctor's appointment? Well, I had to schedule my medical 2 months ago because our doctors are so overworked, because when you have a runny nose, you run to the doctor because, of course, it's free. And that's how long it takes to get in for a medical.
Hey, my sister, we're getting a taste of that already. And I've read, I was thinking about doing a show just on, and I may do one next week, I don't know, just on what's going on because of so-called healthcare reform here. Colorado, a bunch of companies have pulled out of the small business market in Colorado. They said, look, we are not going to write policies anymore for companies with less than 50 employees. They're just gone. They're just not going to do it. So how does that help us? And, it was just a couple weeks ago, they were coming out and saying, oh, look, the benefits of healthcare reform are going to start kicking in. It will one of the rules that, kicked in was the fact that a child with a pre-existing condition can no longer be turned down. An insurance company has to insure a child with a pre-existing condition. And what happened immediately, as soon as it went into effect, companies said, you know what? We don't write those policies at all anymore. We no longer write policies for children on their own. They're going to have to be with their parent. So how did that help us?
Yeah.
You can't force companies to be unprofitable. And that's all this did. And here's the thing. I mean, this isn't a surprise, and it's exactly what the government was hoping for. Now, they'll never come out and say that, but ultimately, if you look at the progression of how this is going to work, it's really not that difficult. What they wanted, instead of healthcare reform, what they wanted is exactly what you have in your country, a single-payer system. That's what they want down here. They know they could never get that voted in one shot. But they wrote this so that ultimately that's where we'll end up. If you make the rules so restrictive, if you make it next to impossible for insurance companies to be profitable, and they will just stop offering these services, and then what happens next is the government comes in and says, look, we don't have any choice. We're going to have to offer this. We're going to have to turn this into a government program. And that's exactly what's going to happen.
Well, and when you're just printing money like drunken sailors, how are you going to pay for that?
Hey,
sooner
you
or
know,
later,
I said,
there is a day of reckoning.
I said that one time in a forum, and I had a lot of drunken sailors mad at me.
Well, that's okay. I'll take one for the team, and I'll offend them for you.
Okay.
But
drunken sailors said they were much more responsible than our government.
But, yeah, when that day of reckoning comes, sooner or later, somebody's got to write the check.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, one of the things I forgot to mention at the top of the show was Lisa put a lot of work into the forums this week. And one of the things that she did was contacted Charlie Daniels and asked him to come on the show. And we almost thought we were going to have him on the show with us tonight, but he is recovering and resting from, I guess he had a big performance in Georgia this week. And we are exploring future dates where maybe we can get him on the show.
Well, he's certainly bang on with this.
Yeah. And I thought it was, it is a big risk for somebody in his position. There's no real upside for him. And maybe he'll sell a couple more records. I know I bought a bunch of his music so I could play it this weekend. I don't have to buy the music. I'm allowed to play it. We have a blanket license for, bumper music under 30 seconds. But I bought it all instead. So I guess maybe there is an upside. I'll certainly support him. But there's a big downside, too. There's a big risk when somebody in his position comes out with a very strong opinion. Not just, that he disagrees or that was pretty specific and pretty strongly worded.
Well, and it's, you're headed down a very, very slippery slope. And it's not successful in Canada, so I'm not sure how it's going to be any better here. And, you know, when I was cashing a check, half of my check went to deductions.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on, and I think, you know, we talk about the fair tax all the time, and I still think it's a great, great way to move our country in a much better direction. And there are so many topics we could go into on that. There was another letter that John Stossel wrote this week, and you know, I'm not sure if there's anybody that understands the free market system and the capitalistic system and is able to put it in simple terms better than John Stossel. I really like his stuff. But he was talking about, you know, the argument we're making now about taxing the rich, and it's really just a class warfare is all it is. You know, if I hear this one more time about, oh, don't worry about those people, they all make more than $200,000 a year, as if that justifies stealing their money. And we could go into that, but he was talking about states that haven't figured this out yet. And there was an example in here, and I want to read this, and I want people to think about it logically, not the knee-jerk reaction of that guy has so much money, why would it ever matter? And it's about, and I don't know who this guy is, he's from New York, Tom Golisano, but he started with $3,000 and one employee. I mean, doesn't that sound like a lot of us? $3,000 and us, one employee maybe. He started a business that processes paychecks for companies. He created 13,000 jobs. He now employs 13,000 people, and think about what that means as far as the people that depend on him, the taxes that get paid, the payroll taxes, the sales taxes, the property taxes, the on and on and on, 13,000 jobs. And he started this company in New York State. So now we're going to... These numbers I'm going to give you is only what his state personal income tax was. And he says it was finally the straw that broke the camel's back. And he says, I don't like to throw around numbers, but his personal income tax in New York State was $13,800 a day. Now, just stop and think about that for a minute. How is that possibly right? That's not his business. That's not payroll taxes. That's not, you know, any other tax that he has to pay for the business. That's after everything is said and done in the business. His personal income tax, he had to write a check to New York State every day for $13,800. So what did he do? He did the smart thing. He moved to Florida. He doesn't have to pay him anything now.
Yeah, and I mean, there's greed at its finest, and had New York State, you know, clicked in and realized, you know, you can only milk the golden cow so far.
That's it. You can't keep, I don't care how much money somebody makes, you can't keep taxing them like that. It's not good for anybody.
And, you know, to everybody that complains about people like that and the obscene money they're making, start a business, knock your socks off.
Yeah, he started with $3,000 and one employee. This isn't a guy with, you know, who was born with the silver spoon in his mouth and handed a bunch of money. He created all that wealth. And you know what? He didn't do it cheating people. You know, he did it by creating something and working probably a whole lot harder and smarter than most people. And think of all the benefits that he's created over time. And Dale, I really appreciate the comments, and I happen to just look at the board, and hands are going up everywhere, so I want to move on. Let's go to New York. Tim, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
I wanted to talk about a couple things. First of all, I wanted to make comment about what you started with this evening, that some people do not want to take advice from somebody they don't agree with. My personal opinion is I don't agree with 100% of what you say, but I don't agree with 100% of, I don't know, anyone that I found. So I still listen to advice because I think there's things I can gain from everybody, even people I don't agree with. So I certainly want you to voice your opinion exactly as it is. And, you know, I'll agree with what I will, and I'll disagree with, you know, what I don't. But
well, you know, and I want to address that before you move on. That's a logical thinking response. And I'm the same way. I mean, there are a lot of people, and I'll give you a great example, Warren Buffett. I've read his books. I mean, you have to know that the guy is an absolute genius when it comes to business and investment. And I'll continue to read his books, and I'll continue to pay attention to what he does. But I really disagree with a lot of his politics. You know, I think that's logical and reasonable. In the same thing, the way that you just said it. But you'd be surprised at the emails I get, the angry, emotional emails that people say that they're tuning out. They don't want to hear my business advice because they so strongly disagree with my political advice.
I know, and I've heard the same thing from other people when I'm speaking, that they find some piece of something I said, they don't agree with it, so you just throw out everything he said because I don't agree with that one part.
Right.
I do agree with a lot of what Charlie Daniels' letter said, and that's what I wanted to talk about. I'm against the whole redistribution of wealth idea, but one of the things that I really disagree with personally is the attitude towards the Muslim faith. Now, you need to know that I'm saying this as a Christian, that I'm not a Muslim, but I guess I just have a lot of problem with the fear that I feel like a lot of people have towards the Muslims, the bad feeling towards this, the mosque being built near the area of the 9/11 attack. And I come to this conclusion because I don't think all the Muslim people staged the attack. Therefore, all of them shouldn't be grouped in the same, with the same people that conducted the attack. To me, it's the same thing as when David Koresh, who considered himself a Christian, had the Branch Davidian compound. He could profess himself as a Christian and, you know, and attack the government, but we did not, you know, start taking measures to protect ourselves from the Christians. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and you know what? Of all the issues that were addressed in this letter and of all the issues that we're currently debating and arguing, I would have to say that, first of all, that the issue of the Ground Zero Mosque, I know next to nothing about. I haven't read through it, and I don't like to comment on things that I don't feel I'm very well educated on. I've ignored it. I've purposely not read it. Because I really think it's a non-issue. I mean, if there are so many things that I can disagree with Obama and the current administration on, the Muslim issue to me really is kind of a non-issue.
Yeah, I agree with you. The same thing, he made reference in there about the jury is still out as to whether Barack Obama is a Muslim. Again, to me, it's a non-issue. You know what I mean? You can choose to believe or not believe in whatever you want. That's part of the freedom that I enjoy as an American, you know. Same thing, I think he has the right to believe in what he wants to. One way or another, it doesn't matter to me. I do kind of wish that he would ease up on the checkbook. You know, my family's kind of got a policy that if you keep writing checks long after the money's gone, eventually we take the checkbook away. But
For me, I think, and rather than get off on a lot of tangents, for me it really does all come back to one thing. And for me it really is about the economic direction that we're taking the country. The argument to me comes down to more or less government control, more or less government intervention into business. And this is where we are 180 degrees apart. Obama and the current administration and the direction they're taking the country. It seems to me that his answer is always more government intervention, and it really is redistribution of wealth. And for me, I think we need to make a hard turn back towards a less regulated, capitalistic free market system. And that, to me, is the core of all of this.
Well, so one more quick point I wanted to make, that I believe the way to do that, rather than regulation, is through education. That is, that
absolutely.
No one ever went to all the households and said, you need to reduce your amount of spending by a certain amount. What a lot of people did, for example, was find out that, I don't know, a television set was less expensive at Walmart than the store they've been shopping at. That's why so many people turned to start shopping at Walmart. It wasn't because the regulation said you had to. It was because they found it was a better path to take once they learned, you know, it was less expensive there.
Right.
My point being that in a lot of business and a lot of homes and stuff, just learning how they can do things more efficiently can turn a lot of the personal economies, that is everybody's households, around. That's why I listen to your show and try to, you know, follow some of the ideas that you use, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate the comments. I'm looking at a ton of hands up here. Let's go to Connecticut. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, fair tax now.
Yeah, let's get it done. Remember November.
Yeah, buddy. Hey, listen, you pushed my hot button when you guys started talking about health insurance. And I'm a company driver, 32 years experience, 6 years with this company. And honestly, when I started, it was like a home I found. I wanted to retire here. In the intervening last few years, we've got ourselves into some hard times. We're a very, very specialized transportation company with a niche, about 16 drivers. So we're under the 50 mark. Let me tell you, and I know you're a fan of the HSA, and so am I, insurance policy, where if those that are listening don't understand what an HSA is, it's a high deductible insurance plan coupled with a health savings account. Now, I was the lead driver for all the drivers, so I kind of took it on the chin, and the owner wanted me to be the example, and I did it. I did it when it first came out, although it would cost me more money. Now, just to back up a little bit, 3 years ago, one of the biggest negatives for this job was the cost of the health care. My share of it. 3 years ago, it was about $90 a week, or let's say $80 a week. It was in the 80s.
Okay.
And that was an 80-20 plan with a $300 deductible.
Right.
When they decided to go to the HSA, although I liked the plan, I knew it was going to be more expensive. It would end up with the savings portion of it with a $4,000 deductible. It would cost me approximately $125 a week to participate
in
that plan. Now, haven't heard wow yet. So $125 a week, and I absolutely loved it. It just so happens we got into some medical issues, and my wife had a torn retina, and that added up the bills, and within a month or two we were on the plan. We've already exhausted our deductible plus some, and I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. The next year, I can mention names because they're the ones charging it. It's the Blue Cross. They're the only ones that will handle anyone under 50 employees.
Right.
And they gave us a 45% cost raise for the second year. They changed our deductible from $4,000 to $5,000 deductible. So our cost went up to $160 per week for our portion. And that's, you know, that was with 80% paid by the company for me and 50% paid by the company for my wife. This is only for me and my wife, not a family plan.
Wow.
Now, if that wasn't bad enough, this August when we started our new term, we stated a $5,000 deductible. We ended up, after that, we're back to a 90-10 plan, which means over $5,000 out of my pocket, I pay 10% of whatever cost it is. And now it's $200 a week for my portion out of my paycheck every week. That's $10,000 plus that I have to pay out of my pay. Right. Just, you know, all these other companies around here that have the exact same plan that are over 50 or 100 employees or whatever the marks are, you know, they're paying $50, $60 a month for the same plan that I have. So do you think this is a hot button for me or not? You bet it is.
Yeah, and it's just going to get worse. I mean, we're seeing it. And, you know, I am in touch with a company in Colorado, ATBS. I deal with them a lot, and I talk to the owners a lot, and they just missed the cutoff. They have 52 employees on health insurance. Had they been under the 50 mark, they're not sure what would have happened. I mean, the insurance companies in Colorado just pulled out, said we're not going to cover that market anymore. And it is because of our so-called health care reform. I've got hands up everywhere, and I'm trying to look through. Let's go to Sweetwater, Texas. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. I just wanted to thank you for your great rendition, your reading of that letter from the great patriot Charlie Daniels. Man, I tell you, I just had the chills running up and down my spine tonight. And it reminds me, when I read that letter or hear you read it, that our president has shut down all of the drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, but then loans money to Mexico and Brazil so that they can do deep water drilling. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the things that we could go into are almost endless.
He blames Bush for our current economic problems because, you know, we went to war without paying for it, and we got this tax cut without paying for it. So we did all this stuff that we didn't pay for, so I guess now we're in a financial bind. But every day he seems to come up with something else that he wants to spend money on that he's already admitted we don't have because Bush spent it all. He wants to increase some foreign aid to certain countries. And of course, the health care bill is expensive out the wazoo. But yet he never misses an opportunity to tell us how Bush spent all the money and didn't pay for it. So we're stuck. But then he keeps spending money. Well, if Bush spent money and without paying for it, what is he doing?
Well, it's easy. All he's going to do is just he'll just tax the rich. They have lots of money.
Let's see. I don't remember exactly what thread this came out of on the website today, but it was Donald Trump in an interview with somebody saying that, you know, the rich are just not going to stand to be taxed like this. They will leave. And the interviewer says, well, you're still here. He said, yeah, I haven't left yet. But, you know, I have my breaking point, too. And, you know, if rich people can live wherever they want to, if that means living in another country or on another continent, you know, they'll do it to keep from paying confiscatory taxes. And people take issue with me calling it a punitive tax to punish the rich. What else can you call it when you tax them not only more than you tax others, but you tax them at a higher rate? You know, well, you're only talking about 2% of the population. So 98% of the population get to vote on what those 2% pay in taxes. It's kind of like 10 wolves and 2 sheep getting together to vote on what they're going to have for dinner.
Yeah. Absolutely. That quote you're talking about is from the same article that I just quoted the New York Taxes from by John Stossel, and it says, Donald Trump, who knows something about making money, says, of course, the rich will leave when hit with higher taxes. I know these people, he told me. They're international people. Whether they live here or live in a place like Switzerland doesn't really matter to them. And Stossel said, you haven't left. And he answered, I haven't left yet. Look, the rich people are going to leave and other people are going to leave. You're going to end up with lots of people that don't produce. And that's the spiral. That's the end. And that's where we're headed.
I don't remember who the governor of New York was at the time, but once the tax rate got so high, Rush Limbaugh moved to Florida.
Yeah.
He took his show and everything and left. And the governor says, well, if I'd have known raising taxes would have run Rush Limbaugh off, I'd have done it a long time ago. What?
You know, Bruce
people
Williams
actually
did
voted
the same
for
thing.
This guy.
Bruce Williams did the same thing. His show, when he was a New Yorker, his show started in New York, and he moved to Florida. You know, how many people have to move from New York to Florida before we get it?
Well, I think they figured out if they keep raising the taxes, eventually all the rich people would be gone, and then the poor people won't have any rich people to compare themselves to, so they won't know that they're poor anymore.
There you go. That's good thinking.
Anyway, that's
all
right. I got.
Well, that's all I need, and in fact, I need to move along. Let's go to Mike in South Carolina. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to bring up a point about this idea that if the government subsidizes health care, there's no cost associated to the people who are subscribing to it. I've got a sister who's lived in England 38 years, married to an Englishman. They make about $300,000 a year running their business, and this is a private business. 19% of their income goes towards the cost of their health care. While they may not have to pull out a credit card or anything and pay for their medical when they walk into a clinic, if they can even get into a clinic, they pay a substantially large portion. I remember the other gentleman saying he's paying about $10,000 a year. Well, my sister and her husband are paying $57,000 a year of their income for two people who are in relatively good health. But when they have minor health problems, they don't get it done in England. They come to the U.S. My sister schedules two trips a year to cover any medical needs that she has.
Yeah, that's crazy. That is just crazy. And that's where we're headed. I mean, we're getting there quick. We're getting there quick.
And as a percentage of their gross income, they pay 70% in taxes. They make $300,000 a year, and 70% of that, over $200,000, goes to pay taxes. Oh, and guess what? They also have a VAT tax. Every time they buy something, they're paying like 21-22%, I think, is the current rate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, we've known that about European countries for a long time, and that's the great thing, was the great thing about us, about America. We didn't have those kind of tax systems, but boy, we are headed there really quickly.
The more money you give the government, the more they're going to waste it. When there's no oversight, when there's no control over how that money is spent, it disappears very quickly with little or no accounting, and we're the ones who are subsidizing this, and it's just got to stop. We've got to hold them accountable, and the only time we can do it is at election time. And as far as I'm concerned, as much as I like my representatives that I have now, I would just as soon make everybody leave and let's put in a whole new slot, because once they get entrenched in Washington, they develop their own little fiefdoms, and these guys are like overlords.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Hey, good comments. I appreciate it. Let's go to... where am I going? I am off to Jeff in Ohio, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I really appreciate your topic tonight, and I also appreciate the fact that there are things more important in this life than just being necessarily popular or doing things that are financially expedient. Sometimes you just got to do things because it's right. And
well, you know, and I can't think of a more important time to think that way than right now.
Exactly right. I am convinced, I am a strong believer in what sometimes is referred to as American exceptionalism. I do not believe that this country is just a product of chance. I think that the founding fathers were incredibly, beyond normally wise men. You had assemblies there of people that will probably never be assembled again of that magnitude and that quality of character. And they struck upon a plan. I'm not an expert on this, but I certainly do not believe that they sat discussing free enterprise. That term was not a term they were acquainted with in the 18th century. But what they did, and I believe it was providential, but what they did was they created an environment where a person was motivated to work hard. There were reasons to work hard. The government provided a foundational basis on which this free enterprise that we think of, it evolved. And what an incredible thing it was. And what we are doing today in our society and in government as a whole is we are just destroying the very foundations of that. And that is what frustrates me more than anything else, is a turning away from the very principles that made this country a financial masterpiece.
I couldn't agree with you more. That is really my focus, and we can get sidetracked on so many things and details and debates, but to me what it really comes down to is what you just said. We have got to get back to the core principles that made this country so great. That's the answer to this, and it's simple. It's been proven so many times that that works, and the alternatives don't. It is what made us great, and you know, there are so many examples of it, and it still exists. I mean, we still have. It's much farther away from what it used to be, but we still have that opportunity every day. People still create, you know, unbelievable amounts of wealth and prosperity, not only for themselves, but for a lot of other people around them. And they create great products and services, and they're doing it despite everything the government's trying to do to stop it.
That is exactly right. And I think the trucking industry is in itself a very prime example of how the free enterprise system can work. You take a little guy like me. I'm a one-truck operation. I started out 7 years ago not knowing anything about this business. I went out, I bought my first truck, I bought my first trailer, I found a niche that I wanted to get into, and I'm having the best year in 2010 that I've ever had. And it's just
That's
because
it right there.
I have, you know, and I have been able to learn and develop and create ideas. I've taken counsel from guys like you. I've cut my overhead. I've improved my efficiency. That's what the free enterprise system is all about. And the trucking industry is a microcosm of the whole free enterprise system.
And everybody benefits. That's the great thing. Everybody benefits.
Exactly right. So, all right, I'll let somebody else get on, Kevin. Thanks again so much for what you do out here.
Thank you. I appreciate the call. Let's go to Judd in Mass. Welcome to the program.
When you say Mass, it makes me sound like I'm on church almost.
Yeah. I was reading it as Lisa wrote it.
Well, it's actually the state of Massachusetts, which we affectionately refer to in New Hampshire as the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
but you have
back
like,
when...
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Back when Governor Dukakis from Massachusetts was governor, he wanted a slogan for his state to get behind. He used to have it printed out, "Make it in Massachusetts." And we added to that unofficially by saying, "Spend it in New Hampshire," because it's a tax-free state. No sales tax, no income tax. A wonderful system. Keeps me grounded up there for that reason.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd like to say that as far as Charlie Daniels is concerned, I've been a fan of his since 1980, since he came out with Uneasy Rider, back around the time that I started driving. And I've always liked his music, and I like his sense of political correctness even more so. And whatever it takes to support him, then I will do it. And
yeah, absolutely.
Also,
you know, there are a lot of musicians that, you know, I like their music and I listen to it and I buy it, and I have no idea what their politics are and don't really care. But it was refreshing to see somebody come out with such a strong opinion and to take a stance one way or the other.
Well, he's definitely an American and definitely a patriot. And the country needs more like him. I don't know where we're going to find them in that genre, but, you know, they're few and far between, it seems like, when they get to be musicians and actors and whatnot. But the rare ones we do have are definitely appreciated.
Yeah, in fact, we had two good examples this year that I posted letters from both of them. A month or so back was when Ted Nugent came out in support of the fair tax.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely, you know, that man, if we can get him to, should definitely get down to Washington, D.C. And just start chucking him out. You know, just walk right through the hallways, go right into the Senate, start chucking him out.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
we got something
absolutely
there that's going to get voted out, but definitely the only way to cure this problem is go in there and everybody vote. Vote.
Yeah.
Vote. Vote again. And vote. Did I say vote?
I think you did.
Well,
hey, in the notes, Lisa has something in here about Atlas Shrugged.
Oh, excellent book. Excellent book. Thoroughly grounded. Many beliefs that I wondered about and didn't realize that there was actually a book that was written about such things. I would like to see it become required reading of every graduate of high school in the country.
Well, I'll tell you, that's never going to happen as long as we have our government indoctrination. I mean, our public schools.
Very well put.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just amazing what can really be brought to light by going through a book like that and reading and reading and reading, and all of a sudden, sometime along the way, it all of a sudden dawns on you, hey, that's happening right around me.
That's the scariest part. I've read the book. Well, I'm almost kind of in the middle of it again, and you know, I read a lot all the time, so it's not the book I'm reading full time. I've actually got it on audiobook this time. When we travel, we've been listening to it on and off, but it's my third time. I read it in my 20s, and I got it. I mean, it was a big part of, I somehow think I believed all of those things already. I just hadn't, you know, they hadn't formulated in my mind, and that book really helped. I mean, it kind of helped solidify all those ideas and why they made sense to me. And then I read it again probably 10 or 12 years later, and it made even more sense. And now that I listen to it or read it again, I don't need it to make sense anymore. I know that it does. What I'm getting out of it this time is how scary it is to see this happening around us.
It's scary enough for me, so I'm going to end up buying multiple copies this year about Christmas time and passing them around to people I truly care about to help them maybe understand a few things about things that are going on that they don't really get a grasp of. Now, as far as Muslims are concerned, seeing as how we're in the politics tonight, The old saying is, keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. Let them build a mosque. Let them build that mosque. And then teach them about the laws that they're going to use to beat us with. And let them know what they're all about by, you know, going in there with eminent domain, take the mosque over, make it a memorial for the 3,000 dead capitalists that were coming from all over the world to work in those twin towers. And that's just my personal opinion, but I think it would be, you know, a way of showing them how we feel about such things.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to say it again. I try to keep up on a lot of issues. I try to keep up on as much as I can. But I pick and choose what I spend my time reading about. And I see, as I'm scrolling through the news every day, I see the headlines. I know it's an issue. And I have to say, I really haven't read a single article about what's going on with that. And I don't like to make comments about things I haven't researched, and I don't like to make comments based on just what I hear. I like to read, I like to do the research, but this is an issue for me. It's just not an issue. It's a non-issue for me. And maybe it should be, maybe I should be more in tune with what's going on with it, but I'm just not. I think there are, I mean, again, I have to pick and choose what I spend my time on. And the I guess the religious fights, maybe this is more than that, I don't know. I tend to focus on what I think is the core, which is getting back to the true free market system that has worked so well for so long. And I think everything else can stem from that. And in order to do that, we have to vote. So I think that's the real key issue right now is the vote. And next to that, I think that the fair tax is something that I think everybody knows I pretty strongly support. And I think it is an answer to a lot of the problems going on in the country. And Matt posted, I'm surprised Matt wasn't on the call tonight. Matt posted a great forum about state debt ratios. He put up a list of all 50 states and D.C., the ratio of debt to their gross domestic product. And the number one on the list has the highest debt ratio, and actually you want the lowest debt ratio. So, you know, number 51 on the list is the most economically healthy when it comes to their ratio of debt versus income, basically, or production. And it's very interesting that the top three states, Tennessee, Nevada, and Texas, are the top three states. None of them have a state income tax. So that goes along with the idea of a fair tax, not an income tax, a consumption tax instead. In fact, I think that there are nine states with no income tax, and six of those nine are in the top half of the debt ratio. The three top are all states with no income tax. That says a lot. And speaking of saying a lot, we're all out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining me. I know it was purely political, but I enjoyed it. I want to thank everybody for sharing their opinion and calling in. I had fun with it, and I think once in a while, I still want to do the political thing, and I think it is important right now. I'm always surprised that I don't get more people who disagree, though. Wonder why that is. All right, the live show is coming up on Sirius XM here in 30 minutes, so join us for that. We'll see you back here for the podcast next Wednesday night. Lisa will be putting out emails letting you know what we'll be doing next week. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.